Into hour number two. It's going to be a busy one. Welcome to the program. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live. I'm in Southern California. I am specifically in the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, you know that Rocket can. All right, let me set up the second hour for you. Open right now. In 20 minutes from right now, Andy Staples, who is a college football insider for The Athletic, will be joining us. Talk some racing with Martin Truex Jr. at 40 past. He is the driver of the number 19 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. And then at the end of hour number three, Jordan Poyer, safety for the Buffalo Bills, will be joining us. Hey, let me give you another phone number. In addition to the toll-free number into the show, 1-800-636-8686, a voicemail number. Jim Rome podcast, still very much a thing. I mentioned that Ben Askren is my guest on Wednesday. You all can be a part of that. And the reason why you want to have this phone number, write this down really quick, or put it in your phone, better yet, 949-385-0447, 949-385-0447. The reason you want that number is twofold. Number one, you can say things on my podcast that you could never say on this show. Just as I say things on that podcast that I could never say on this show. That's one reason. Number two, maybe you're afraid to call the program. Maybe you're afraid to be on live in front of 8 billion people. I understand that. It's not for everybody. Get your reps in. Leave a voicemail message, and if it's really good, we'll use it on our podcast. If it's really bad, we'll use it on the podcast. And if you give me a C, no one's going to ever hear it. So your number is 949-385-0447. It's a good way to get practice. Do it. Some reaction as we go into hour number two. Rome, tell Adam Hawk to put my call through. I have a hot take about Julian Edelman being a Hall of Famer. Signed, Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame guy. Brian in Charlotte. Show has never been built on topics like that. You know, those lazy topics where the host doesn't have to actually do any work or have any original thoughts. You know, like back in the day, Bob Knight, reaction. Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, reaction. Should college athletes be paid? They already are, reaction. Is Tiger going to blow by Jack? Reaction. Senor Rome, Julian Edelman is definitely a Hall of Famer. Very sincerely, designated hitter David Ortiz. Ernesto Z in Las Vegas. Hey, listen, I don't have a ballot. I don't have a vote. They don't ask me. I'm not a part of it. I just can't imagine that when his name comes up before the voters and somebody says, Jeremy Shockey has more TDs. I don't know how you refute that. I don't know how you overcome that. Yeah, but he's got 3 rings. Yeah, all right. But he averaged a little over 3 touchdowns a year in the regular season and like 560 yards a year. He played really big on a really big stage for a dynasty and made the most of his opportunity and busted his ass. I mean, I could not respect that anymore. Don't forget about that PED bust. But even putting that aside for a minute, like, I really admire this guy a lot. But that alone is not going to put a guy in the Hall of Fame. If you look at the credentials, top to bottom, he's just not. There's no argument even. In fact, it's an absurd argument if you really look at it and you look at those numbers. Dear Jim, did I hear you say Dion Branch? Man, was that a great interview that you did with him back in the day. Sincerely, the guy who called you before the interview with Dion Branch actually happened.
Thanks for the vine, homie.
You got it, man. What's up?
Just wanted to say, great interview with Dion Branch, my fellow U of L alum. Grew up with him, went to classes with him for 4 years. Wanted to say I was proud of him for representing, for bringing it in the bowl.
You know what? He had a great game. He's a good guy. Did you hear that interview?
Oh, absolutely.
You liked it?
Absolutely, Romy.
What'd you like best?
He's just a classy guy. I mean, there's not many like him. And, you know, especially going to class with a bunch of other athletes, and I don't want to stereotype anybody, but, you know, this guy really just stepped up and really showed what he's about.
Then, you know, I agree, Alex, but then when you get a guy like that on the air, it really comes out the kind of guy that he is. For instance, what did he say that you really liked best that really stood out?
You know, Romy, I can't really point out. I mean, you know, to be honest, I had to step out of the car for a minute, but I'm out here picking up applications around the L-ville, but just wanted to say...
My man, the reason you could not point to anything in particular is because he hasn't been on yet, Alex.
Alex in Louisville. A great jungle moment. Paul in Albany wanted me to reset that. Wore that guy who called you and said hello before pushing play on his taped phone call. This is an incredible reset. Listen to this. This is from 2003. Iggy in Springfield. All right, this is what he's talking about. Hold on. This guy taped his call. And he played it when I went to him. It's one thing to read your call live. It's another to put it on Memorex and then hit play. This is Iggy. Listen to this.
What's up, Ig?
What's up, Tim?
Talk to me.
Hey, Romy, I see where Paul Tagliabue fine lines President Matt.
All right, so stop right there. If you listen to that very carefully, I mean, you can hear the change in tonality. And you have to have a pair of headphones on to really hear it, but you can hear the click of the cassette or whatever format he was on back in the day. The tonality of the thing is obviously different. His voice sounds different, but you can actually hear the tape start to roll. Listen really carefully. If you're near a radio, put your head up against the radio. Or if you've got cans on, listen to that. But this guy taped his phone call and hit play after saying hello to me live. Hey, Iggy, way to man up and say hello live. At least you got that part in there live. Way to handle that part of it. What up, pimp? Listen to this guy.
What's up, Ig?
What's up, Tim?
Talk to me.
Hey, Romy, I see where Paul Tagliabue fine lines President Matt Millen, 200.
How about Paul in Albany? Good job, Paul. Resetting Ig. I haven't thought about Ig in a while. And he got run. He got run for pre-taping his call. My man had to use tape. I mean, lip syncing on stage is bad enough. But pre-taping your call? Wow. Needless to say, old Igster never lived that down. There are just some things you do not come back from. Hey, Rome, I can't wait for the movie about my career. The lead role is expected to be played by a dartboard. Yeah, I'm not going to insert the guy with the bad complexion. We all know there's like four or five. They keep making the rounds here on the show. I'm not playing that game either. Romy, judging by the noise I've heard, my neighbor has broken the all-time scoring record. Regards, townhome, guys, shared wall. If you don't want to hear your neighbor getting it on, don't move into a townhome. Buy a single-family home. Yeah, Rome, you know how expensive that is? I do. You're going to have to move. You're going to have to move to where you can afford a single-family home like everybody else. Otherwise, if you choose to stay where you are because geographically you like that location and the best that you can afford is a townhome, no shame in that. I get it. But don't be crying when somebody's knocking it out next door. That's part of the townhome life. Hashtag townhome life. In fact, why don't you just fight fire with fire? Do better. Do better. 1-800-636-8686. Anybody else want to take part? You better yet, you want to take over? You know where to find me. I'm looking for your phone calls. I'm getting phone calls, just not the ones I'm looking for. All right, then you've got Conor McGregor, right? The build-up to McGregor-Poirier. Now, before we talk about the trilogy fight, do you remember what the build-up was like for McGregor-Poirier 2? Remember the good vibes between these two guys and that they seem to have a genuine level of mutual respect. It seemed a little unusual for Conor, you know, generally, compared to how he goes about things prior to fights. But the two of them were showing each other a lot of respect prior to that fight. Yeah, well, all that apparently is out the window. And you might be throwing McGregor Poirier 3 out the window with it. And the reason is, wait for it, a charitable contribution. You know, that one thing that tends to wreck all great fights before they happen. A charitable contribution. The backstory is this. In the build-up to their fight in January at UFC 257, McGregor said that he would give a half a mil, 500 gur, to Poirier's foundation that was raising money to build a gym in Lafayette, Louisiana. It seemed like a really cool gesture at the time. As always, if something seems too good to be true, generally it is. Now, I'm not sure where it went awry or astray, but it did. Because Poirier goes out, he beats McGregor, and then on Sunday, Poirier calls him out for not making good on his pledge. McGregor had predicted that he would win the trilogy fight on July 10th by knockout. That worked its way back to Poirier, and this is what he tweeted, and I quote, "That's a fun prediction. You also predicted a donation to my foundation, and you and your team stopped responding after the fight in January. See you soon, July 10th, paid in full." End of quote. Uh-oh! And that's a solid shot right there, right? Nobody ever wants to be called out for not making good on a pledge. Especially a pledge to a charity. Man, that is a bad, bad look. And McGregor knows it because he fired right back. Quote, "A donation, not a debt. We've been awaiting the plans for the money that never came. I do with all my donations. Know where it's going dot for dot. Otherwise, it goes walking, as is the case with a lot of these foundations, sadly. You took the McG over the belt shows I was right." End of quote. And then Poirier came right back. Quote, "100% never a debt. You offered, we accepted, and like I said, your team never responded to our emails regarding the process of where funds would be put to work. July 10th, you will taste defeat yet again." At this point, you know, once Connor's in it, he's in it to win it. And look out, quote, "My team does do their due diligence to make sure every donation meets the mark. My generosity is known. You will pay with your brain for this attempt at smearing my name. Shooting ass, shelling ass bitch. Little bitch kicks from a shell. Good luck when you're caught, you're bleeped." End quote. Well, to use that extremely overused phrase from Anchorman, that escalated quickly.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
That went from a prediction about a knockout to calling a guy out for a pledge that was not fulfilled, to arguing about accounting for charities, to calling somebody a, quote, "shooting ass, shelling ass bitch who has, quote, little bitch kicks from a shell." Oh, and adding that he will pay with your brain for attempts to smear my name. Listen, I have no idea what happened between these two guys in terms of that pledge. I have no idea whether or not Connor did or didn't say he would do this or that. Connor is known for his generosity. It's something that has been talked about and written about for a while now. From the outside, it seems clear that Connor has not paid on that pledge. But he's saying he didn't receive pay because he didn't receive details on where that money would go. And it generally is good donor stewardship to provide some information for the donor on where the money's going to go. But I'm not sure if that was an initial condition for the pledge. Again, I don't know exactly what happened between the two of these guys, but I know this. It's not a great look to have made a pledge and then not fulfill that pledge. Connor knows that, which is why he's firing back so hard about this. Because it sure seems like he doesn't want to have that rap. Nobody does. And if you thought Connor was done, then you were wrong and you do not know Connor, because he also started a new thread and broke this out for Poirier. Quote, "You're ripped, you inbred hillbilly. Why do you wink with your ears? You bleeping, brain-dead hillbilly. 500K with no plan in place. You hang tight, fool. You must be new to money. The fight is off, by the way. I'm going to fight someone else on the 10th. Good luck on your old contract, kid." End quote. Hillbilly smack, winking with your ears smack. I mean, that's vintage Connor insults. I mean, how do you even respond to something like that? Well, Poirier did, actually, with two letters, okay, and a clip of Poirier's face or fist smashing Connor's face and knocking him out in their last fight. In other words, scoreboard look up at it.
Okay.
Strong response. But you got to know this, right? You might have gotten this guy in the cage, but you're not going to beat this guy at social media. You know that, Connor was not going to let that die. He responded with a thumbs-up emoji and the caption, "Smell you later, P," along with a pic after he beat him in the first fight. Bottom line, I don't know if this fight's going to happen or if it's off. At this point, I'd be surprised if it were off. They want it. Everybody else wants it. It's a trilogy fight. They're tied at one apiece. We need to know who's going to get the ultimate scoreboard. Connor seemed to be very interested in making Poirier pay with his brain. And he seems to want to make sure that everybody knows that Dustin is a shooting ass, shelling ass bitch with little bitch kicks. I don't know. I have a hard time seeing this fight getting ripped because of a charitable contribution. But fellas, get it done, man. Work it out. Work it out. Both sides need to do what it's going to take to make this gift happen. Dustin, tell him where the money is going. Connor, make good on what you promised and stroke that check and make the freaking fight happen. Get it off Twitter. Put it in the cage where it belongs. Because most of all, I need more of things like this from Connor.
Fanboy. The man was a fanboy. He bought t-shirts of mine. He f***ing supported the cause. You remember that? You little fanboy bitch.
I will behead Rafael Dos Anjos. I will drag his head through the streets of Rio de Janeiro, through a parade of people, I'd imagine.
He looks like a little breakdancer or something, a little 12-year-old breakdancer. What the f***? He's 40, carrying a school bag on stage. What are you doing with a school bag on stage? You can't even read.
I achieved it all, right? I broke the game before I was 30 years of age.
Ask these nuts. I don't have to do nothing for nobody. I'm psycho bred me. I don't have to no one's for a chick like f***ing you.
I'm cool with all the gods. Gods recognize God.
F*** you.
That's all right. Hey, Connor. Connor, don't throw those Camp Connor.
His little legs, his little core, his little head. I'm going to knock him out inside 4 rounds, mark my words.
Game is on its knees, and I'm out here rallying around California in a car that spits fire, dressed like El Chapo, with anacondas on my feet.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the f*** he wants.
I need more of that. Work it out, dudes. When we come back, Andy Staples joins us. And then Martin Truex Jr. right after that. Got a question for you, too. Why is Old Trapper Beef Jerky so amazing? Well, there is something to be said, right, for a family business. It stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not one and the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality right through their iconic clear view packages. Every bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the best ingredients. From their lean strips of beef, seasoned with top quality spices, to their real wood-fired smoke, Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in 4 mouth-watering flavors. Old-fashioned, with a hint of brown sugar sweetness. You've got teriyaki, you've got peppered, and there's hot and spicy. Every one of them chock full of good protein to satisfy your biggest hunger cravings and provide real sustained energy. Old Trapper simply is a better way to snack. Make it part of your weekly grocery list. Keep a good supply on hand for you and your family if you do not see it. Ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so let's go ahead and start the interview portion of the program. As I mentioned, we would go back to back coming up. After this, I've got Martin Truex Jr. In hour number 3, Jordan Poyer of the Buffalo Bills. But as promised, we're joined right now by somebody who covers college football and essentially all barbecue-related issues for The Athletic. He is host of The Andy Staples Show. He is a friend of this program. He is Andy Staples. Andy, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. In fact, I think I butchered that open. What I probably should have said is Coach Andy, because you coached in the Florida State spring game on Saturday. Let me start right there. In fact, I want to spend a little bit of time on this. How did that opportunity first come to be, and then how did that go?
So they asked a few of us, me and Andrew Adelson from ESPN, and then Gene Deckerhoff, who's the voice of the Seminoles and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Jeff Cameron, who hosts a radio show in Tallahassee. They said, "We want you guys to be guest coaches. It'll be Andy and Andrea against
Gene and Jeff, and we're gonna give you call sheets. We're actually gonna let you call plays at the end of the game. You're each probably gonna get an offensive and a defensive series, and you know, just try to win the game. Try to call the plays the best you can. You're gonna get a headset. Everything's gonna be just like it would be in a regular game. And I'm thinking, yeah, whatever. They're just gonna have us standing there. I get there Friday. They hand me this laminated call sheet. I mean, it looks like the real deal, and it's not Ben McAdoo Cheesecake Factory menu call sheet.
Right.
But it's also not Mike Leach note card call sheet. So I had some options.
All right. So if you didn't know exactly what you were getting into, exactly how did you prepare for that?
I just thought about what situation are we most likely to be in. For example, I was thinking about my first defensive call. And, you know, I was a walk-on tackling dummy at Florida in another lifetime. And I remember I was thinking, okay, when would they have put me in the spring game? And I'm thinking, okay, that's probably what some of the guys will be dealing with, although some of these guys are actually like backups and actually can play, unlike me. But those guys don't get a lot of 11-on-11 reps together, so the offensive linemen don't necessarily communicate all that well. So I'm thinking, okay, I want to bring the most rushers I can, and I want to bring them from unusual places. So I looked, we only had 8 defensive calls, but there was a fire zone blitz from the field side. And I was like, this is what I want, because it has a guy who's normally going to be a pass rusher dropping into coverage, and he gets replaced by a nickel who just comes zooming in. And I'm like, this is perfect, because they're not going to see that coming. And I was like, I call that the first play. I'm like, I got this. And I look, and there's 2 backs in the backfield. I'm like, okay, that's fine. As long as one or both goes out for a pass, I'm good. They both stayed in the block. I was like, crap. I have sent 5 rushers into a 7-man protection. I have no shot. We're getting picked apart. They're scoring a touchdown. And then I watch the tailback, and he goes the wrong way. He forgets to look backside. And in comes my nickel screaming for a sack. So one play call, 1 sack. I was a genius.
Andy Staples joining us. I've got to ask you then. So when your blitzer gets home that way and you're a genius, Mike Norvell had warned you the day before that play calling is actually addicting. What did he mean by that? And did you experience any of that when you were right and your guy got home?
Oh, I was like Tiger Woods making a 50-foot putt, that the same level of fist pump. And I'm like running down the sideline. And meanwhile, I got the defense coordinator, Adam Fuller, in my ear like, dude, you got to call another play like right now. So stop that and look at the offense and call a play. And luckily, I called something. I just called like a cover 3 match. And we ended up, I think their back slipped on that play. So I ended up calling a 3-and-out on defense. And then I get to offense, and I can't take any credit. We scored a touchdown on one of the plays I called, but I can't even take credit for it because we were standing on the sideline before we got to our part where we're calling plays. And Mackenzie Milton, who you guys remember as dude who just lit it up at UCF, had the horrific injury that looked career-ending. Well, he's back. He's healthy. He's grad transferred to Florida State, and he's trying to win that starting job. So he wasn't in at the time, and he comes over to us on the sideline, and he knows Andrea because she wrote a bunch about him at UCF. And he asked her to hand him the call sheet. And he's like, he looks at it for 5 seconds, and he's like, these 3 are your best plays. And then he points at one of them, and he goes, and if you hit a big one, follow up with this. And that's exactly what I did. We hit a 14-yard slant on 2nd down, and I followed up with this play that has a bubble on one side and then a wheel route that comes underneath it, and we hit the wheel wide open. Like, the offensive coordinator is in my ear before the ball is even thrown, going, it's a touchdown! And that's where I screwed up the most, because I was going to do the Lane Kiffin, throw the call sheet in the air while the ball is in the air,
right,
and I froze.
Coach Andy Staples joining us. That is so good. All that stuff is so good. You mentioned Milton. He is at Florida State now. He's looking to earn that starting spot there. Again, as you mentioned, he had that absolutely catastrophic, devastating knee injury back in 2018. How impressed are you with him and even where he's even at this point?
Oh, it does your heart good to see him running around out there. I mean, it's just because when he got hurt, it was like, oh, this is awful. And they were worried about saving the blood supply to his leg. They were worried about potentially having to amputate. And so the fact that he's out there now playing football and has a real chance to win a starting job in a Power 5 team, I think it's awesome. And whether he winds up winning that starting job or not, he's going to help them. I mean, just the little interaction we had where, I mean, he looked at the thing for 5 seconds and told us exactly how it would work. predicted it down to the letter. This is a guy who knows what he's looking at. He's a leader, so he's going to help them no matter what.
So, Andy, let me ask you this. You've played the game. You've covered the game for quite some time. You know football. When you were a ref, you wrote that you came away from that experience with a new perspective. That's something you dabbled in as well. Do you come away from your time now as a play caller and a coach with an even newer perspective?
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, I have more empathy for those guys because, you know, we criticize, why'd you call this here? First of all, there's 94 people screaming in your ear while you're trying to figure out what you want to do. And by the way, you have no time. Like, if you're a defensive play caller and the offense is running that high tempo, you have 0 seconds to pick a play. So that's the thing. It's very hard. And then some of it, you can call the perfect play and somebody false starts and it's over and your drive's derailed. Or in the situation I was in where on defense, I actually called the wrong play first, but because their back went the wrong direction, I looked like I was right. They called a better play than I did, but my guys won because sometimes stuff happens. And so it's tough. We, you know, there's a fine line between you're a genius and we're putting for sale signs in your yard.
Andy Staples joining us. Great point. Listen, last thought. Florida State's gone through a tough time the past few years. You spent some time there, obviously. How would you describe the vibe there right now and the energy around that program? What's it feel like to you?
They are working their way back, and this is the first chance that Mike Norvell and his staff have really had to get to know these guys because they were dealing with all the pandemic stuff last year. Mike Norvell had the team over to his house on Friday night. It's the first time he's had his players to his house since he's been the coach, and he got hired December 19. So it's been a process for them, and they're in a situation where I'm not sure Mike Norvell realized how much work there was to be done when he took the job because you assume it's Florida State. They got studs. They got five stars everywhere. Well, they don't right now. So he's got to replenish that, but he's also got to be competitive while they're doing it. And I think doing some of the things they've done, getting a transfer like Mackenzie Milton, getting a transfer like Jermaine Johnson from Georgia, they've got some guys in key spots now where they should be much more competitive. So they should be a lot more fun to watch this year than they were last year.
He covers college football for The Athletic. He is host of the Andy Staples Show. He also coaches as part of his side hustle. Andy, great to have you back. Appreciate you as always. Good talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim.
Andy Staples. That's fun. That's different. All right, when we come back, we will continue to change up on you. Martin Truex Jr. is the driver of the number 19 Toyota for Joe Gibbs. That's next. Jordan Poyer, Bills safety, coming up at 11:40 Pacific time. Right now, here is a sports update with all the latest. Welcome back. Quick reminder, the next generation of paint protection is here. New 303 Graphene Nano Spray Coating will provide up to 12 months of professional-level protection. Insane water beading and jaw-dropping shine. With one simple application, visit 303radio.com for more information. Quickly, Rome Slice. No issues with not fulfilling your promise of contributing to a charity. Regards, having a bum wash your windshield, and then driving away without giving them any change. If you use the word bum in a tweet or an email, it is effectively bum smack. And we don't allow it. We're joined right now by the driver of the number 19 for Joe Gibbs Racing. He is the 2017 Cup Series champ, two-time Xfinity Series champ, winner of the Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief 500 on Sunday. He leads the Cup Series with 2 wins this season. 29 career wins overall. The 36th driver to win in all three of NASCAR's top touring series. The next Cup race is the Toyota Owners 400 at Richmond Raceway, Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Martin Truex Jr. is my guest. Martin, good to have you on. How are you?
Doing good, Jim. How's it going?
Good, good. It's good to visit with you. So let me start right here. On the surface, Martin, it seems like it's just another race in Martinsville and another win for you, but it seems like maybe this one was a little bit different than the ones that came before it because in the previous wins, correct me if I'm wrong, you led more than 100 laps. This time around, you didn't lead until the 455th lap. So how did the car feel in the early part of the race on Sunday?
Yeah, for sure. It was a little different way to get to victory lane at Martinsville. You know, like you said, we We in the past races that we've won there, we led a whole bunch of the race and really had a dominant car. And this time was, you know, we ran third, fourth, fifth, sixth, somewhere in there most of the day, and just continued to battle and work hard on the car, and you know, and just kept our heads up and kept digging hard and fought till the end, and we found ourselves battling for the lead with you know, 25 to go or something. So pretty cool when they work out that way, and you can kind of surprise them.
Martin Truex Jr. joining us, no doubt, right? Like your crew chief, James Small, he called it a, quote, bleep show. Is that how it felt to you? And if so, how did you work your way through that?
You know, I'd be honest with you. I mean, I think a lot of races kind of go this way. They, you know, there's not a whole lot of times that you get your car just perfect and everything's going the way you want it to. And, you know, I mean, most of these cup races, man, they're just a battle behind the wheel. And, you know, it's pretty tough to get the cars doing exactly what you want these days, especially without practice. So, you know, just fighting, you know, digging as hard as you can all day long and driving the hard car as hard as you can, but at the same time, being patient, you know, and not forcing issues and, getting yourself in trouble and tearing up your equipment. So driving the car hard, but at the same time taking care of it and just continuing to work with your crew chief on making adjustments on pit stops.
You know, Martin, it seems to me it's got to be so rewarding that when you don't have a dominant car on that day, the team can still find a way to grind out a win. But you've also talked about the fact that you're going to race hard and you're going to race clean. And you've always been known as one of the cleanest drivers around. But at the same time, you do rack up wins. How do you balance that ability to be a clean driver and to win, like to win the right way?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just, you know, the way I've always done things and, you know, I've been able to, fortunately been able to make it work, you know, been with some great teams, great equipment. You know, this team this year, I mean, I feel great about them. So, you know, just, you know, I feel like if you race people the right way, they, for the most part, return the favor. And, you know, if you don't do it the right way, then you're going to get, you know, you're going to get it back. So I think in the long run, really, I mean, you know, being a considerate driver and just, you know, I race aggressive, I race hard. But I try not to, at least, and sometimes we all make mistakes, right? But try not to just, you know, make dumb moves and, you know, knock a guy out of the way for third or fourth or fifth or whatever, or early in the race or, you know, things like that. So just try to be respectful. And I feel like for the most part, I get that back in return and it pays off.
Is that kind of unspoken? Is that kind of the way it's done? Do people know and remember? And does it all kind of take care of itself on the track that way?
I think for the most part, Jim, yes. I mean, you know, the guys out there that are, when they're behind you, there's a chance they do something stupid or, you know, they push the issue early in the race or, you see guys, you know, certain guys do things differently. And, you know, pretty much everyone on the racetrack that we race with, you understand their tendencies. You understand, you know, in certain positions, what you think they might do ahead of time. And you kind of race accordingly and make decisions accordingly. So I think it definitely comes around and drivers have good memories. You know, I can remember a lot of things over the years that have happened, and drivers don't tend to forget too easily.
Martin Truex Jr. is joining us. I can absolutely see where that might be the case. Now, that's your third win in your last four starts in Martinsville and your fifth win in your last 11 short track starts. What is it about Martinsville that seems to fit you and your style so well?
You know, I think it's just something we figured out over the years. You know, Martinsville is a very unique racetrack. It looks simple, you know, small little short paperclip, basically, a half-mile track, you know, been around since, you know, the 50s or the 40s or whatever. So very, very old racetrack, and it's really not changed a lot in a long time, but it's very, very technical. And, you know, I think for me, I've worked with the same, you know, core group of guys really since Furniture Row in 20, you know, I guess about 2015. And we've just been able to continue to work on similar things. And, you know, our cars are still, you know, built sort of the same. And we're able just to, you know, kind of just fine tune on our setup each time we go. And we've just, you know, for whatever reason, we just hit on something that works for me. And it's been able to work for, you know, for quite a few years now. And we just continue to tweak on that with, you know, the tire changes and you know, the cars change year to year just based on rules and the way they build them and things. So just just small tweaks here and there, and it's been able to keep working for us.
Martin Truex Jr. is joining us once again on the program. You know, you broke through in 2018 with that first win on a track shorter than a mile, and now you're stacking these wins, so it's all come together. I say that because this is the first of a run of five tracks that will be part of the playoffs. Obviously, every single race is important, but does it take on an added level of significance when you know you're going through these playoff tracks?
Yeah, I think you approach them a little bit different. You know, I think a few weeks ago, being able to go out to Phoenix and win there was a huge one because, you know, that's where the championship race is going to be held. And we put a lot of effort into trying something new there because we hadn't been good enough to win the past few years. And being able to go out there and win was huge. And I look at the next 5 weeks kind of the same way. You know, it's a time to maybe try some things if there's a one or two of those tracks that you're not as good as you need to be, or you know, you feel like you weren't as good as you need to be last year, or you need to try some things. It's really a good time to, you know, figure out where you stand, so you kind of know where you stand for the playoffs when they start. And you know, for us, we've got two wins in the bank. We're starting to get some, you know, good playoff bonus points, and it'd be nice to be able to rack up some more. But we can take some risk. We can go there, maybe try some new things at some of these tracks, and really build up our notebook for the playoffs.
Hey, Martin, speaking of trying things, a couple of weeks back, you won the truck race on the dirt at Bristol Motor Speedway. You were entering a truck series race for the first time in a decade and a half. So going into the race, what was your plan, and what were you hoping to get out of it?
Well, honestly, it was really the reasoning was, you know, we were going to race the cup cars on dirt, and I don't have a lot of dirt experience. And, you know, I've literally never raced a real race in a dirt car before, so I just wanted to do the truck to get some experience, and you know, it turned out just to be so much fun, and to be able to win was a real added bonus. So I had a blast doing that, and you know, obviously a great truck team with KVM, but man, had a lot of fun, and I think surprised a lot of people, including myself, on the dirt.
You know, it sounds like a lot of fun. For those who are not familiar with it, like, how similar is a truck series race to a Cup Series race, and then how good did that feel to win it?
Well, it felt great to win it. You always want to win every time you get in something, but you know, the truck and the car on a really short track like that, I would say, they're pretty similar. You know, they obviously look a lot different, but the suspension and the way they're built, they're all, you know, pretty similar, and honestly, the truck and the car at Bristol on the dirt both drove pretty much the same, so I think part of that was, you know, the teams I was with and our setups, I would say, were you know, somewhat similar. But, you know, at a bigger track, they would definitely be a lot different than at a short track.
So let me finally ask you this, Martin, because when I've talked to coaches over the years, you know, people who've had a lot of success, they often talk about how losing is misery and winning is only relief. You've had a lot of success, and from the outside, it seems like you're able to enjoy that success, that it's like, it's actually not just relief, it's an actual source of joy. Is that right? Has it always been that way, or did you kind of develop that perspective?
You know, I'll be honest with you, Jim. I think it's something that, you know, that just kind of changed for me. I went through a long dry spell, and, you know, I think my story in racing is one that, you know, a lot of race fans understand or know about. But, you know, I won my first Cup race back in 07, my second season, and then I didn't win again till 2012. And it just, you know, when you go through, you know, rough patches and things like that, it just makes you really appreciate the good times more. And, you know, there was a time there where I lost my ride at MWR and you know, things weren't looking so good. So, I mean, I just really appreciate the opportunity that I've got and really appreciate the people I work with, and the opportunity to go out and win races is just, it's a dream come true. It's what I've always wanted. You know, growing up as a kid racing go-karts, I dreamed of, you know, being a cup driver someday, and, you know, to win a championship and to be consistently winning races at the top level is just, it's so much fun, and it's so rewarding, and, you know, it's a lot of hard work, and, you know, when I win these things, I feel like I treat them like it's my last one, because you never know what's going to happen next.
No doubt. He is the driver of the number 19 car for Joe Gibbs Racing, the 2017 Cup Series champ. Again, the next race is the Toyota Owners 400 at Richmond Raceway. It's Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Martin, as you mentioned off the top, it had been a little while since you and I came together. It's great to have you back on the show. I always enjoy the conversation, and thank you very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jim. Take care.
You too, Martin. Great talking to you. Such a good dude. 1-800-636-8686. Alvin, I don't even need to ask, right, at this point. Go ahead, hit me with that disclaimer.
Good guy, top performer.
They know what they're doing.
Respects the fans.
There's no better league to deal with than NASCAR.
Gives back, appreciates the sport, has time for the fans.
And NASCAR has won me over.
I like it. I get it.
They call on time. They do good interviews. They have good attitudes. It's big. It's not going away.
Good interview, shows up on time.
Every one of those guys is like that.
They won me over. I will say for the record once again, I've done a 180.
He's not Tony Stewart. Rusty Wallace is my favorite guest. And if it's not Rusty Wallace, it's Clint Boyer and his bus driver, Curtis. I did not break the pace car. Carl Edwards, class act, Trevor Bain. The best energy. And I love Jeff Gordon. I can't pick favorites, but Jimmy Johnson's my favorite. And Brad Keselowski is right there. Such a good dude. Look at Alvin adding to it at the very end. If it sounds like I've interviewed everybody who's ever gotten behind the wheel of a stock car or running that series, I think it is because I have now, except for Smoke. And as I've always said, if everybody wants to do the show, then I'm not doing my job. You wonder why I play that NASCAR disclaimer, because that's one of the great turnarounds of all time. There's some things that I used to say and do back in the day that you would think that would never work out. I was not very complimentary of that sport back in the day, but NASCAR was so great. You all know that story, right? They came to me one day and said, hey, look, we get you. We get you. We get your deal, but you're not really being fair, right? You're not really being fair. You don't talk to our guys. You don't come to the track. You don't hang out. It's just easy for you to pot shot us. So, you know, what do you say we give you a driver or two and you get to know them? Would you be up for that? And I'm like, absolutely. I'm not unreasonable. I think that you left turn only guys are not that interesting, but yeah, I'll do that. You're right. That's fair. And then they all started showing up and they were all those things. On time, accessible, interesting. The races were competitive. The fans were into it. Quote, I did a 180. And come to find out, they're not all named Dale, Daryl, Ernie, Ricky, Bobby out.